Legal Matters.
Alex Simeonides is my guest, CEO and co-founder at Capital Legacy. He joins me now on the line. Alex, thank you so much for joining us. I appreciate your time.
Yeah. Thanks for having me, Aubrey.
So every year we have this conversation on this platform, the conversation relating to wills and the fact that in many cases when somebody dies and they don't have a valid and up-to-date will, that spells out confusion and conflict in the family. That hasn't changed, hey, Alex?
No, that hasn't changed. And we're 1 year later, but there has been a very marked improvement in people doing wills. The pandemic certainly brought upon a deep sense of mortality and I guess also people losing a loved one. So, you know, from the last time we spoke, Aubrey, that we've seen a huge take-up in signed wills, but unfortunately we're still getting a lot of the states where, exactly what you said, confusion, distraught, because there was no will. So the problem's still not solved.
Yeah. It ought not to be that we should be talking about this conversation, I mean, about wills and the validity of wills and all of those things because of our fear of mortality. I suppose the question I'm trying to ask, Alex, is what should be the motivating sentiment behind the conversation that must happen? Right, it's one of those inevitable conversations for anybody that wants to put their issues in order. You've made the remark that our mortality during this COVID-19 period has perhaps heightened our senses around getting our wills sorted out. But under normal circumstances, I get the sense that we shouldn't necessarily be motivated entirely by fear as opposed perhaps to reason, yeah?
No, absolutely. And I suppose casting my mind back to pre-COVID times, you know, different things got people to do their will. So a sense of responsibility got some people to do their will. A big life event, having a child, buying a house, got getting married, got other people to do their will. So these are very positive things, but yet it still comes back to you've got to think about that ultimately you're going to leave this place on earth and you've got stuff and you've got things that you want to leave to people and you want to make sure people are looked after. So I suppose there's not too many positives about doing a will. It's one of those things you've got to do.
Yeah.
And different things will appeal to different people. You know, your most organized person is probably at the top of their list. Your most disorganized person who procrastinates is at the bottom of their list. But yet still that last person gets their will done maybe because they spurred on because they hold their new baby girl or boy in their arms and they feel a deep sense of, you know, I need to provide and look after this little one now and this is something I need to do.
It's a difficult conversation whichever way you look at it, but it's one that's inevitable, one that must be had. How do we start the conversation, Alex? Besides, of course, always referring to the possible mayhem that follows the death of a loved one if there is no will. How do we even start the conversation in our families? How do I gather my family around and say, okay, folks, I'd like to talk about the moment when I'm going to die? You know what I mean? How do you start this conversation?
Yeah, so I mean, if I have to sit down and we don't have your family around, the first thing I'd ask you is close your eyes and tell me what needs to happen for you to look after your family? What needs to go to who? Is there any conditions attached to that? You know, do you need your car to go to your sister? Do you need your house to be available for your family to continue to live in? Do you have a business? So the first thing I always do is sit you down and say, what do you have and what do you want to see happen to it when you pass away? That's a great lead into then getting into the actual will. And then to your point, maybe bringing the family together. But I always encourage a little bit of your own introspection first about what you want to happen. So for example, people have a family home, you know, where they grew up.
Yep.
And it's complicated because sometimes they with a partner or a spouse who maybe is a bit estranged from the family, you need to think about then leaving that house, that family home, to the family and not just saying, oh, I'll leave everything to my spouse because you could be creating chaos.
I've seen way too many incidents of that, Alex. In my own families and families that I am close to, the story of the family home is always, always an explosive one. By the way, give us a call as I speak to Alex Simeonides, CEO and co-founder of Capital Legacy. We're talking about wills, last will and testament. Is yours in order? Have you made sure that it's valid and up to date? Give us a call. Especially around the issue of the family home. It is always so cumbersome, so explosive, so emotive. Please give us a call and let us know what your thoughts are. I've already got a number of calls lined up, Alex. So let me quickly take this one call and then perhaps we can continue. Anonymous is in Seshego in Polokwane. Good evening to you, Anonymous.
Hi, Brother Aubrey. How are you?
I'm well, my brother. What is on your mind?
It's been a year that we've been trying to register a family trust with this lawyer here in Polokwane. They've failed. It's over a year. And the donor, which is my mom, has since passed on. And they still have the documents. They keep blaming the COVID and everything, the lack of staff at the magistrate. I don't know if it's the magistrate office or what. You know, we've gone from one level of frustration to the other.
Yeah. Can I ask, Anonymous, what is the reason for the need for a trust, a family trust?
Yeah, it is so that, you know, my mom, or rather, us, myself and my sister, who are the direct descendants of my mom, you know, can inherit the house together with our children and their children's children, you know. The house, it's actually two properties. They're not going to be sold. They're still going to remain under the family trust.
I see. All right, let's hear what Alex has to say. Alex, the wisdom of having a family trust for what Anonymous is talking about, but why does it take so long?
So I don't want to throw them under the bus, but the master's officers and the magistrate's officers, as well as the deed office, the place where you transfer the title of the property, have been opening and closing and more closed and open since March last year. We've pushed and heaved and hoed all over the country to get letters of executorship, letters of authority to register things like a family trust, title deeds registered to transfer the property. We are getting it done, but I've got to sympathize with them. We really are back against the wall at the moment because they keep getting infections in those relevant offices. They need to be safe. Even my own people, we go into the offices. Since this year, they've only just started going back now after getting their second jabs. The problem was they were just getting COVID and it was dangerous. So I sympathize with Anonymous, but at the same time, there's nothing else that can be done. It's a trickle at the moment.
Yeah.
But things are coming through, and a really good attorney who is determined and goes there every day will get it sorted.
Yeah.
To the second point, part of your question, Aubrey, is a family trust a good idea in this instance? It sounds like a brilliant idea because the family trust it's never going to die. It's going to, Anonymous and their family and their family and their children are never going to have this problem that he's going through right now. Because it just stays within the two properties he mentioned, stay in the trust. It never needs to be transferred again. So I think you mentioned that the mommy possibly had great foresight into actually creating that or telling the executive to create this trust, to put these enduring assets, the family homes, in this trust. Now it's just about whoever he's got there to get throughout the season and get the master's office to issue the deed.
We're starting at a very interesting place, so let's stay with it. Why is a trust such a brilliant incubator of family assets? Why not a company? Why not a company? What is it about the trust that makes?
So I'm going to try avoid being too technical. In this particular instance, the trust. So for the listeners, it's a legal entity. It gets its own registration number here in South Africa. It's this legal shell that can own things. It can be controlled by multiple trustees. And it's then got these beneficiaries. You can create classes of beneficiaries. You don't need to go there name by name. You can say, my children and their children. And then automatically it just keeps you keep automatically adding beneficiaries as time goes by.
Yeah.
And what's really important in this particular instance is that the trustees have a personal responsibility and liability to act in the interest, by law, in the interest of the beneficiaries. And because it's two family homes, it's not a business, right, Aubrey? If it was a business, I would suggest that the company shares are then owned by the trust. But that's what we're talking about here, because that's got another tax implication that we're not going to get into. So for this particular purpose, because it's not a business, it sounds like, for these two homes, the trust is the perfect vehicle, because we can have that continued class of beneficiaries that can just keep on, you know, utilizing the house and having some kind of vested interest in it.
All right, let's start here, Alex. I die and I have my children and my wife. What should my will reflect? What should it say in order for my wife to be looked after and my children to be looked after? What are the institutions that these documents need to go through in order to be validated? I heard you speak about the deeds office and the registrar. Talk to me about all of the different institutions that one needs to be acquainted with in order to make sure that these documents, the will, is valid.
Yeah, sure. So let's also strap on that you've got a property. So the first institution is the master's office. That's where we'll register the will, register the estate, and get what we call a letter of executorship. The second institution you need to deal with, or institutions, and everyone forgets about this, is the bank. Now, you've got a bank account, right?
Yeah.
Money in that bank account. That money needs to also go onto your wife and your children, right? The problem is that we've got a whole lot of fraud in this country. So, and people fake death certificates, as we're well aware. You know, it seems obvious when I say it. So what happens as a result is the banks have these very, very stringent measures to verify that you are actually deceased. And that can take, I mean, that's even more troublesome than the master's office. But you've got to understand why they're doing it. It's because they've been fleeced and defrauded so many times with fake death certificates. So after you've got the letter of executorship from the master's office, before we can even do anything else, we've got to then prove to the relevant bank, the banks, that this is indeed a true passing of the individual. After that, then we need to deal with the deeds office. That's the place where you, if you bought a property in your time, you would have been familiar with it, and they're going to transfer the title of the property. Our caller also mentioned the magistrate. So that's where we actually got to then actually place the adverts. So those are big institutions. And then obviously there's FAST. We'd have to deal with FAST.
Sure. So let me understand. You can't write a will in the privacy of your study and keep it in a drawer and think that you have a will. It has to be registered with the masters. You have to have that same document go to your bank. It has to also be known what your thoughts were as far as your will is concerned by the deeds office. Am I correct?
Yeah, not nearly there. So your will is going to appoint an executor. So Aubrey, you're going to say, Alex, you'll be my executor. I then take that will to the master. The master then gives me this letter of executorship saying I'm the executor. I then go to the banks. I go to SARS. I go to the deeds office in terms of the will and execute.
When you say execute, you execute my wishes, obviously.
Yes, exactly. So I'll say to the bank, hey, Standard Bank, FNB, this person passed away. Please can you look for the bank account? Okay, now we need the money to come to what we call an estate late bank account, to hold an account that we use for the money before we hand it over to the beneficiary.
This is the guy that's going to go and make an announcement on my social media pages to say this social media page is no longer valid because the person that looked after it is now no more, and all of those kinds of things, I imagine.
Well, you stumbled into another great subject at the moment that's going on, and we call it your digital estate. So it's not just your social media there, Aubrey. It's your Google account, your Apple account, your podcast account. It also extends to any cryptocurrency that you have, and we call it your digital estate. Now, interestingly, The digital estate, you can put things in your will that you sign. But in order for like places like Facebook or Twitter, Google or Apple to actually, because you've got choices. You can memorialize your Facebook account. You can close your Facebook account. You can hand it over to someone. But you don't actually need a will, as we know, that you're talking about. You actually just need to appoint what we call a digital executor in an electronic document. And that then enables that person to get the death certificate to approach Facebook to do one of your options, memorialize, close, hand over to someone.
The reason why I mention the digital sort of world is because I've come to understand that we live in two worlds now. We live in the virtual world, the digital world, and we live in the real world. And so whatever you do in the real world, you need to consider that it might have to also be done in the virtual world. All right, so I want to reiterate my question, though, Alex, to say that...
Sorry.
To write a will, in other words, to write your thoughts by yourself without the assistance of a professional doth not a will make unless it has
it does. I don't advise it because the probabilities of getting it right are low because you don't know what you don't know, but you know the Wills Act says that anything that purports to be a will is a valid will. There are a whole lot of measures to make it valid, like witnessing and signing. But Aubrey, we've had instances where a person's written on, I'm not joking, a napkin, that their motorbike goes to this person. We actually submit the napkin to the master.
Sure.
Because it purported to be a will. And we didn't end up needing to do it. But if challenged, that could have gone to the High Court and been ratified as a will. I just, you can hear it's very cumbersome.
Yeah, yeah.
So that's why I don't advise it. You know, rather sit with a professional. That professional can prompt you and question you about who's in your life. So, for example, you'll do a will and you'll say, I leave everything to my kids. If your children, Aubrey, are below the age of 18 and you haven't created what we call a testamentary trust in your will, you just left it directly to them, they're unable to inherit that money and that property directly. It needs to be held by the government's guardian fund. But if you're sitting with a professional, they would have said, okay, Aubrey, that's great, but how's your kids? We're going to need to create a testamentary trust as well in the will at the same time.
You're going to need to create what? Say that again, Alex.
We call it a testamentary trust. Well, a capital legacy, we call it a children's trust. So it's a trust that you can ask to be created while you're doing your will, in terms of your will. And I suspect it's something similar to what Anonymous was calling with. So when you're doing your will, you would say, I leave everything to my children in a trust to be created. And this prevents the need for the executor by law, in the absence of this trust, to put the money with the government's guardian fund.
011-883-0702-021-446-0567. You're talking about wills and testaments. What makes them valid? What makes them legal? Yeah. It appears that a napkin can also be understood to be a legal document. But I imagine, though, Alex, that there'd be all sorts of identity authentication measures that would need to be in place in order for us. Because I imagine in the same way that you can have people, creating fraudulent death certificates, people can probably create fraudulent wills.
Oh, we see it 3 times a week, 4 times a week, Aubrey, where families come forward with this document, and the document is clear as day. It's been cut and copied and pasted, and the signatures don't match, and they wave in the thing in our reception, and they say, no, this is the will. And, they even made the mistake of dating the will after the person passed away.
Oh, my word.
So we get it all the time, Aubrey, of people. And like you said, there's a process to be followed. And credit where it's due. The Master's offices, in particular Cape Town, you know, they've actually got handwriting experts.
Sure.
And they actually assess the will, But, you know, people are very quick to talk down our government institutions, but, you know, credit where credit's due. And they verify the stuff.
Let's talk a little bit about the executor. Who is this person? How is that person nominated and appointed? And do they get paid for the work that they do? Are they able to be inheritors of certain aspects of the will? Who is the executor?
So it depends on your situation, Aubrey. Some people they automatically jump to choosing a personal executor, family member, spouse, friend. And the challenge with that is that person probably doesn't know what to do. And they're going to end up giving what we call a power of attorney or an appointment to a professional executor firm to wind up the estate. Because they don't even know where the master's office is. Other people like to do a combination, and I actually like this one, where you have a personal executor and a professional company like ours or a law firm who are in the business of winding up estates. And that way you get that personal touch in terms of dealing with the family, and you get the professional execution and administration of a firm who's now also accountable as well as liable. Because when you're an executor, you're expected to operate at a higher level of being in your fiduciary capacity. And as a result, you are personally liable if anything goes amiss. And you want that. You want that assurance. So you want that professional executor. But there's nothing for nothing, right, Aubrey? Professional executors, and if you've done a personal appointment and you've appointed the professional firm, they're going to charge.
Yeah.
And they're going to charge a percentage of your gross estate. And that's the biggest problem when it comes to wills and estates, because if you've got that far of doing your will, there's a big catch waiting for your family at the end, and it's called the executor and trustee fees. And this can really, really entrap an estate. Let's take your example. Let's say you didn't have too much cash in your estate and you've got a property, you leave the property to your family and kids. The executor needs to get paid in cash. Where's the executor going to get that cash, Aubrey?
Hmm. So what happens typically?
Well, then out of the family, you're going to have to raise the money, they'll have to get a personal loan, an overdraft. Yeah. Or worst case, you have these horror stories of selling the house. And that's why we always encourage people to, and we've built the technology now where when you're doing the will, you can take a little policy with it, and it takes care of those fees. So you're taking care of both the will and the fees at the same time. And you can leave your family with that peace of mind that house is not going to go to them. They don't need to now scramble, apart from just the funeral costs, you know, also pay for the executor and the trustee fees.
011-883-0702. We're talking wills and testaments. Temba is in Kempton Park. Good evening to you, Temba.
Hi, Aubrey. How are you?
I'm well, thanks. Temba, what's on your mind, sir?
I'm okay. Just a quick question. Thanks for a lovely show. The topic is very, very informative.
Appreciate it. Thank you, sir.
The question that I have is, you are married in commerce of property with your partner, and you're still paying a bond, and you've got kids. So the question that I have is it possible to register that property or a bond into a trust so that when you two are gone, the kids will have something that left with? Or do we have to wait for instance, for a bond to be finished so that we can register the property into a trust? So how do you deal with that?
Alex?
Sure, let me give it a shot. So the first thing you need to do there, Temba, is you need to make sure that you've got sufficient cash, and if you don't, life cover to settle that bond. Because when you pass away, the bank is going to want the bond settled, and they're fully entitled to. And if it's not, they will sell the house to get their money. So that's the first point. The second point is if while you're alive, you want to still get it into a trust. Remember I said earlier on the show, it's a separate legal entity. You would need to actually sell the property to the trust. And in so doing, you would need to settle the bond. And I don't know if it's going to be possible, you would need the trust to then get a new bond to settle the old bond. So it's a really complicated process. I think the solution might be for you, Temba, is to do a will where you actually ask for a trust to be created. You have the life insurance that settles the bond, and then you say to the executor, please give this house to this trust and make the trust be the benefit, and then you say who you want the beneficiaries to be, but then the bond is being settled. I don't foresee it being an easy process for you now while you're alive, because then you're going to have to pay the conveyance fees again, Banks, I doubt, would grant a bond on a new trust. So I think you're going to find that difficult right now.
Timber, last bite.
Okay. Thank you.
All right. Timber in Kempton Park. How long typically does an estate take to wind up, Alex?
So let's say right now, not in the current time, given what I told you about the master's offices, but generally you are looking at about a month to get the letter of executorship. You should be aiming for about 4 months to 6 months to get what we call the distribution account or set of accounts, and transfers and cash to come up shortly after that, maybe on the seventh month. And if there's a lot of complications with staff, maybe firearms, I would say about 9 months.
This person asks, evening Aubrey and guest, if I plan to donate my body to science after death, does this go in my will? Much thanks.
Thanks. Yeah, so I've got a bit of a limited understanding here, and I'm going to strap on the piece about organ donation as well. So, yes, you can put in your will, but often the will, it's too late. The will is read too late after you've gone. So normally, as far as I understand, you would register where you want to have your body donated for science. And or if you do not, or if you opted to give your organs. And that is on a central registry that the hospitals then ping when you pass away to see if you've done that. And then they actually follow through on that. By the time the will comes out, it's often too late to be able to donate your body for the purposes of organs or science. So my limited understanding, and I do tend to be correct, but what we recently experienced is that's actually what happens. You can put it in your will, but I think what you need to rather do is to tell your whole family that's what you've done, you've registered with the relevant scientific body.
Hi, Aubrey. Please, can you ask your guest, how would he advise us to get a will for our daughter? Her father and I have married other partners, but would like to get to ensure our child together has security if anything were to happen to either of us. So I suppose this is a couple that used to be married. They've now separated, divorced, married other people, but they have a child together. How do they put together a will together, I think, is the question.
Yeah, so they should each do a will, and in that will they can leave, for example, a special bequest. We call it a bequest of X amount of money or a property to this child that they have together. If the child is under the age of 18, they should say that it should go into a trust to be created as part of that will. They can then leave other things to their other children that they had prior to them getting together.
This person says, I would like to know if a will is valid if I get witnesses to sign it and have it in safekeeping.
So a will is valid and enforceable as long as every single page is signed in wet ink, meaning in the original, and on each page you've got two witnesses and it's dated. That makes the will automatically valid, and it's always ideal to have two original signed versions. Not a copy, two original signed versions. One with you, and one with the person who's your executor. So when you get the will, you print it up twice, and you sign it twice. With the witnesses twice.
Yeah, yeah. 011883, what do you typically want to have in a will, in very broad strokes, Alex? What general information does one need to have if you're going to try and take a stab at this yourself? I mean, I'm very mindful of the fact that you've already advised that it's always better to hand this kind of responsibility over to a professional. But typically, what kind of information is in a will?
So, if I may answer in the opposite, what shouldn't be in your will? So, what shouldn't be in your will is a long list of preferences and wishes. People must understand that a will is a legal document. The cleaner and neater and shorter and simpler and clearer it is, the better, because you're no longer here. So having this long list of, I wish to be put on a boat and I wish that this pot plant goes there and this person to attend this ballet, these are what we call wishes.
And I don't like so-and-so.
Yes, and try to keep them. Don't put them in your will. Put them in a letter. And because what you'll find is that the stuff you want to the real stuff that you need to have in your will, which is the assets you have, who it's going to, if you need to create a trust, and who your executor is. That's it, okay? That stuff pretty much won't change. You'll often want to change your letter because you had family gathering and someone annoyed you and you're going to take away that plot, for example. You know, they're not going to the plot anymore. So that doesn't change the will. So I always try and encourage people to maintain a letter of wishes and then the will.
Yeah. Thabo is in Pretoria. Good evening to you, Thabo.
Good evening, Aubrey. How are you?
Very well, thanks, Thabo. What's on your mind, sir?
My mother passed away early this year. We are three siblings, and I was nominated as an executor. I've got a couple of questions. However, somehow she has a will somewhere, according to people around. I have got my own case. My two siblings are at home. However, the eldest is kind of want to kick out the other one who's left. How do I go about in that regard? She left some few diaries where she mentioned how she wants everything to be done. Can that be binding, or what steps should I follow in this regard?
Well, let me understand. Is there a will? Is there a specific will? Or do you only have those diaries as some sort of memory of what she may have wished?
It's the diaries and people from church, people from her society, whatever. So, yeah, everybody keeps saying, did you find the will? Did you find the will? Did you find the will? Because the will is very important. She complained about this person doing this and that. Find the will. Find the will. There's no way we can find the will. I don't know where it is. One of the banks said that she canceled her will and then they can't give us any copy of that.
Alex?
So, technically speaking, Thabo, you could take the diary to a high court. But that's going to cost you 50,000 rand and 4 months, and it's going to be painful. So unfortunately, I would say the way it looks at the moment, your mom has passed, and I'm very sorry for your loss. Your mom has passed away what we call interstate, no will. And I think you said three siblings, you'll each inherit the same share. And I suspect that you've got the executorship as the will to sign the document.
I lost that part. You said you suspect that he got the executorship, and
because he was the one who was willing to take on the responsibility. So when you pass away without a will, Thabo and Aubrey, there's no executor that's appointed. So the master is allowed to appoint the nearest relative.
Right.
It could be a child, which is Thabo's case.
Right.
So he obviously put his hand up and said, I'll do it. But Thabo has to execute according to interstate succession, which says the three of them each get equal shares.
Even if that was perhaps not the wish of the mom?
Even though. And unless they go through that painful process, and I'm not saying it's going to be successful, of trying to get the diary note accepted as a will.
Alex, this is very, very important. This is very, very important. You're saying to me that if there is no will, right, it doesn't matter how much you believe you know the wishes of the deceased. If there is no will, the way that the assets of the deceased are going to be distributed is according to a formula that the interstate, what did you call it?
We call it interstate succession. Well, we don't call it, but it's actually what it's called in law, sorry. Interstate succession, and it depends on the formula. It depends on the family tree. You know, I was jumping to the assumption that there was only the three siblings that were surviving their mom. If the dad was still around and they were married, the dad would also have a share.
Thabo, did you put your hand up?
All right. No, thank you very much.
All right, Thabo in Pretoria. I think that's so important and a compelling reason why you have to have a will in order for your very clear wishes to be executed. Otherwise, the interstate, what did you call it, Alex?
Interstate succession.
Is going to distribute your assets as per that formula that might not be necessarily according to your wishes. Let's speak to Sipho in Pretoria. Sipho, hi.
Hi.
Yeah, good evening to you.
Good evening. I've got a question here. My father died in the Eastern Cape, and we went to bury him. And I requested, because I had to go and fix the house quickly before, you know, we could bury him. The house was, you know, falling apart. So it was. It took us, about just 7 days to do that before, you know, the Saturday that we buried. Now, the person that I requested to go and find out if there was money in the bank, she was told in the bank that she must go to a master's office to get a letter or something.
Yeah.
And then she went into master's office. She got that letter. She came back to the bank, and she got the money, and she shared it with a younger brother, and she never came back to me to tell me how much it was. And apparently, I was told it was about 14,000. And now the other problem is that the house itself now is, you know, it means that it belongs to her. And we are three at home.
Why do you say that, Sipho? Why do you say that it means that it belongs to her?
Well, the letter says that she's inherited. She claimed she was the only child of my father.
Ah, I see.
And that was not right, yeah. And she never reported anything to me, you know. So I did all the work, the burial and everything, all the costs. Now, how do I go about to...
Because claiming your portion of your father's estate, Alex?
Yes, even because my father's younger brother died just in May this year, and before here in Orlando this time, I buried him because he was living with me. He had Alzheimer's disease and so on. So before I buried him, I went to the same house. And because, you know, he was my father's, that house used to belong to my grandmother, and she left it to my father.
Okay, but you know, at this stage, Sipho, we don't have a will. Do we have a will?
No, there's no will.
All right, so basically you want to know how your portion and your brother's portion can be salvaged from what it appears your sister may have taken everything, because she's the only one that appears at some level to be his only child.
Yes.
All right. Let's hear what Alex has to say. Okay, Alex.
Sure. So you've got two claims. The first one is your expenses that you spent on repairing the home. That is a claim that you need to submit to the estate. Unfortunately, this estate has clearly not been administered professionally or well. So your second claim is that you need to write to the chief master and explain the situation. Because just to the point, you know, that you are and your brother are also lawful descendants of the deceased, and give your birth certificate. And then the master is going to be forced to open up the estate again. Maybe cause your sister to be removed from this place for behaving like this.
Is it possible that they may not necessarily win this particular case?
No, they will. It's in terms of law, they just need to prove to the master that the master in the Eastern Cape has not applied the estate correctly, and that someone's benefited and there were two other remaining children. And all you need to do is provide your birth certificate and they need to open the estate up again. I'm not saying it's going to be easy, because the master's offices get a lot of requests, but that is 100% your legal entitlement.
Right. Okay. Fayaz in Pretoria, hi.
Good day. I just want to find out. I only own a house. That's all I own, right? And I've got no extra money. And I've prepared a will through a bank. Obviously, the executive is going to charge me money. Is it advisable for me to change to a private executor, like someone in the family who's not willing to take a fee?
Alex?
So thanks for the question. So I don't think you're going to get away from the fee, because your family member is probably going to have to outsource the work anyway. They're going to try, and eventually they're going to need to bring someone in, and they're going to charge a fee anyway. Your solution is to look at what I said, coupling the will with a little policy that goes with the will that takes care of the fee. And then the fee will be sorted. But unfortunately, that will cost you a little bit of money every month. If you feel that your friend or family member is up to the task of winding up an estate, you know, the saying, I think, Aubrey, is if you really don't like someone, make them your executor. yeah, so if they really are up to it and they're willing not to charge, then yeah, great. But I doubt it.
So this is a scenario that is, in fact, one of my colleagues here that asked me to ask the question. Father dies, has three properties, has children, it's three properties. Some of those properties are to be sold, yeah, in terms of the will. So there was a will. But we later find out that there is a son, a child, who was a drug addict and didn't get along very well with the father. What do we do with this particular son? Does he have any rights to the father's estate, even though they didn't have a very good relationship?
So there's clearly a will. If that child, that son, is older than the age of 21, it's actually technically 18, but let's say 21 to be safe because there's a little sub caveat there, and they're older than 21, then, and he's not in the will, then he's not going to have a claim against the estate.
Sure.
If, however, he's under the age of 21, he's got what's called a child share or child claim.
Yeah.
Against the... Look, it's tricky between the ages of 18 and 21, but chances are, if you apply his mind and get the right attorney, you'll get it right. But you automatically you can't disinherit children under the age of 21.
Right.
But it'd be interesting to see in that will if there was this acrimony between the father and the son, if the father went and put a particular clause in the will that also says, I mean, we use it in our world, but it says that if someone's insolvent or so forth and then they lose their right to inherit. But I'd have to inspect the world to see what maybe has been done. I suspect that would have been done.
Is there a amount of time in which the will is valid? In other words, can you have a time where the will is no longer valid? Is there a retention period that the will is valid for? Or is it valid in perpetuity?
It's valid in perpetuity until you do a new will that supersedes and actually states it. Says this will takes over from any other wills that I've done in the past. Interesting, Aubrey, is that you can't actually destroy a will. If you have a will and you then do a new will and you tear up the old will, that's actually illegal. We actually need to submit all known wills to the master upon your passing, even though we know the one's been taken over by the other. What I have seen of late is people have been putting expirations on their bequest. So if I die within the next 5 years, I leave my house to Aubrey. If I haven't died within 5 years, it goes to my remaining family. So you start to see expiration on bequest, but your will doesn't expire until you do a new one.
Alex, how do people follow you if they want to continue this conversation with you and perhaps get advice as to how to draw up a will?
EVAS visits us on capitallegacy.co.za. You'll see a little button there. You can give us your name and number. We believe in consultation, professional consultation with your will. So one of our ladies will call and book an appointment with you, either virtually or on the phone or face-to-face. And one of our professional will consultants will sit with you and take you through the journey to make sure you cross your T's and dot your I's.
Alex Simeonidis, CEO and co-founder at Capital Legacy. Thank you very much for joining us, Alex. I appreciate it.
Thank you, Aubrey.